Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, if you'd like to join us, you can. This is a car show where you call up and tell me make, model, year, mileage kind of stuff, and then you give me the symptoms. You say the brake pedal fades to the floor every now and then, or you say I'm overheating, and I ask questions, and then you say sometimes my headlights are dim and sometimes they're bright. That's kind of the exchange that we have. We're talking about car repair. We're talking about what kind of cars you like and don't like. My husband and I want to buy a car, and he wants this, and I want that. What do you think? So I'm looking at it from a maintenance perspective and which cars we see on a regular basis and which cars we see rarely see in. And it doesn't, it's not across the board, so you can't say all Hondas are good, because there's been some ones in the past that have not been good. Same way with Toyota, General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, it's all the same. 602-508-0960. I have a place on my website called the Best Car Repair Shops, and that started in 1988. And the number one question I was asked is where's a good shop? Well, it's not necessary for me to tell everybody that I'm the very best shop in the whole wide world. I already had friends throughout the valley that I trusted. As a matter of fact, there was one at 43rd and Thunderbird, and I used to send my mother there for oil changes because she was closer to him. The idea is that my best car repair shops list has been around a long time. Here's my promise to you. If you have a problem with one of my shops and they don't do what they're told to do by some kind of a dispute resolution program that I've designed, and we have neutral people and they're not associated with me. Nevertheless, if the shop doesn't do it, I will, up to $5,000, and the shop is bye-bye, gone. And two guys have been removed for business practices that I don't like. So nevertheless, I have a good list, and Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is on it. They've been around since 1970. They're in Mesa. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma are just exactly the kind of people you hope move in next to you. They're honest, they're dependable, they do good work, they're very kind to people, and they're a really good pair. So if you are in Mesa and you're looking for a good shop, if you have one, stay there. But if you're looking for a good shop, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa, Main Street just east of Stapley. And we've got a caller already this morning, so we'll do that. Good morning.
And say hello to Tyler.
Tyler, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Good. Well, I just got a 1979 K10 short bed, which is cool. And the carburetor looks like it needs a little tuning and a little work, possibly a rebuild kit. The engine is a 305 V8 with a mild cam. Now, I've never had a cammed engine before, and I was just curious if you had any ideas on what type of carburetor and what CFM would be best for that.
Do you have the original four-barrel Rochester on there?
Do not. It is a Edelbrock currently on there.
Oh, so it has the two screws right in the front of the carburetor that are spring-loaded?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'd keep that one. That's my favorite. You can buy all the
really?
Hollies you want, and you're going to love your repair shop. Well, you're going to hate your repair shop, and they're going to love you. And the whole idea is that what's best for me? The Quadrajet, which was the original one, is the best one. The second best is the Edelbrock you're talking about. That Edelbrock, on a 1 to 10 scale, the Rochester, dependability is probably a 7. Performance is a 9. Your Edelbrock is a 9 and a 9. So that's what I would hang. Now, are you going to set it up yourself?
I don't have much experience with carburetors. I mean, I can, you know, do them a couple of turns one way, another way, and just kind of get them in the middle, but I don't have the equipment to tune it up just the way it needs to be.
Okay. Well, let me help you. So you warm it up real good,
and
those two air fuel mixture screws in the front, you're going to back them back out maybe 4 turns, and it'll start. Now, let me back up a second. How does it idle? Is it nice and smooth?
It's pretty rough right now. The truck was from Sholo, so I think it's jetted and tuned to be up there versus down here, so it's pretty rough right now.
Okay. Does it go rup-da-da-da, rup-da-da-da, rup-da-da, or is it kind of a mess? You need to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Right now it's almost at about 2,000 RPM, so it's just kind of roaring right now.
Okay.
The constant, you know,
okay.
Real loud.
Is the choke flap straight up and down when it's roaring like that?
I'd say it's about 1 o'clock if you were looking at it straight on.
Okay.
So it's not quite completely horizontal or vertical.
You have a fast idle cam, so as the butterfly closes, it lifts the cam up. So you start with a high idle, and as the choke flap opens up and as you throttle up and you drive through your neighborhood, then slowly but surely we bring it down to idle. That's not something I can explain to you. That's a very sophisticated way. But most of us old guys could set that up with a drill bit. So it's no big deal. You use the drill bit for a measurement. Okay, so you're going to warm it up really good. You're going to back those screws out four turns, and you're going to go a half a turn on the right, in. Half a turn on the left, half a turn on the right, half a turn on the left. Sooner or later, you're going to hear it going, and I don't want it at the fast idle, so I want you to warm it up really good. And you're going to hear the idle go, and you're going to see a drop in RPM. That means you just shut off the fuel on the idle circuit. Okay? So you're going to back that one out a half a turn, and you're going to leave them both exactly where they're at. So you're just going to start threading in those one of those airfoil mixture screws because they're going to be even. And if you want, you can do both of them. You can do a half on the right and a half on the left or whatever. You can do a quarter-quarter. I don't care. But sooner or later, you're going to get to the point where you're starting to rob the engine of fuel. So that's your sweet point, okay? Now, I'm worried about this mild cam. A lot of people say, oh, it's got a mild cam, which that's bull, okay? A mild cam to a hot rod cam is going to make the idle roll a lot. That's what it's going to do. You're going to have a tough time with an idle, and you're going to need a professional to jet it and to get the idle best you can. But I think we can start right here. The mild cam is something that's easy to brag about, but it's hard to prove. And so I hear that a lot, but you can set a glass of water on the hood of many of those vehicles and it won't even ripple the water, and a camshaft other than stock is going to ripple the water. So, and then on the timing, it's got a vacuum advance on it, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So you're going to leave everything connected and you're going to drive it and see how it runs, and then you're going to advance the timing. Okay. And when you advance the timing, I want you to go from 6 to 7 or 6 to 8 and 8 to 10 and 10 to 12. So do you have a timing light?
I do.
Okay. So you're going to just have it idle. I need everything at idle to start this. And then you're just going to kind of ramp it up. But you're going to go drive it. And, oh, okay, it's okay. Go up 2. And then, oh, it's better. Go up 2, go up 2. And then pretty soon it's going to rattle. So it's going to ping.
Okay.
Back it off. 2-3 degrees. You've just hit the sweet spot. I don't care what the timing light says. I just bring it up till it rattles, back it off 2 or 3 degrees.
Sweet.
And those two things there. And now there's a lot of other things going on here. Does it have an HEI distributor? Does it have a really big distributor, the coil in the top?
No coil in the top. It is a Delco distributor. The kid who I bought it from said it was out of an 80s Chevy truck. I would probably put a new distributor if this wasn't good.
Well, but the HEI has the coil in the cap, so there's just 8 wires coming from it. You don't have a separate coil that feeds spark to the distributor cap. It'll have a square cover on the top of it.
Gotcha.
Okay. I'm betting that the 80 is going to have that one in it. That's a good one. You want to keep that one. And your 79 should have an HEI in it. The HEI is a really great distributor, but we have problems with the mechanical advance and the vacuum advance. So the mechanical advance, you pull off the cap, you grab the rotor, you'll turn it one way and it'll spring back. Boom, we're done. But if you turn it one way and it sticks, you got a problem. Then you'd buy a rebuilt distributor. So there's some other stuff, but most of us older guys, we can probably adjust that baby to the edge of a razor blade for $100, $125. And that doesn't include any parts, of course. But if everything's working, then that's what it would be like.
Okay. And I don't know if you just have one quick second for one last small question.
Sure.
The charcoal canister that was on it, two of the ports on it are broke. On it, unfortunately, so I'm going to go to a junkyard later today and look for a new one. There is a new one, actually, that I can get. It's just bigger in diameter, but the connections are exactly the same, and I was just wondering if emissions would complain about that, or if they wouldn't care as long as it was hooked up.
They wouldn't even know. Neither would I. if it'll fit in the bracket and it has exactly the same that it's got, you're okay. You have three vacuum lines. You need to make sure they all go to the place that they ought to. But really and truly, they're only going to lift up the hood and look at it. If you pass emissions and your CO and your HC and your NOx and your oxygen is all okay, carbon dioxide, then yeah, it's going to pass with no problem. They're going to check your gas cap and all that other kind of stuff. But to answer your question, they're not going to know, neither would I. Alrighty.
Awesome. Well, Mark, thank you very much for your help there.
You're welcome, Tyler. You're welcome. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 if you'd like to join us. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
That would be Henry.
Henry, good morning.
In Gilbert.
Okay.
Good morning, sir. I've got a rather philosophical, mind-bending question. Now, you know how American cars are all named after a concept like Journey, Odyssey, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Japanese are more of an interpretation of something they believe in, and Germans are all file numbers, basically. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is, and what do you prefer? If you were going to make a car, would you have it as a model number, as a concept of some other language, or as some kind of an American experience?
I don't like any of those. I think, you know, the Suburban would be a haul all.
Like, look at the word town and country. It would can handle the town and country.
It can't because it's a two-wheel drive. I see exactly what you're saying. I've never been asked this question for in my whole life. I'm quite sure I could be around a campfire with about 20 of my cowboy buddies, and we could come up with names for every car. Now, whether they were going to be, whether they'd be appropriate for the airwaves would be a different story. But I understand. I like the idea of a name for a car other than the M13 and rather than the Toyota Corolla. I like the Corolla and Camry, and I like all that kind of stuff. The foreign cars are a little bit different, and the M13 and then the J6 and the J8, those don't really represent the car. So if you go, I got a Jaguar that's a J8, nobody knows what the heck that is. So it's a matter of...
Some people might know it's 8-cylinder versus 6 or whatever in the model name. But, yeah, I was thinking about that, and as I drive around all day and I look at the names of some of these, like, I like the idea of the Odyssey because it's going on a trip, you know, a tour, that kind of thing. That's clever. But when it gets to the Japanese ones, it's almost like in the book they should tell you what it means.
And that...
Where did the name Versa versus Maxima versus Altima? It sounds like characters out of a cartoon or something.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But I wish I could help you more, but I just, that's a question. You know what? There's just not enough room on my hard drive to deal with that. So anyway.
That's what I'm going to do. Every time I call you, I'm going to push your hard drive to the edge, and you'll have to fragment it by the time I'm done with you.
You know, no. I commonly tell my family, my RAM is full. That's... I got to do whatever I got to do in the next 20 minutes. But if they come to me with some big problem, then I just wave my hand and tell them my hard drive's full. And it's a way to just say, get away from me because I'm not helping you because I'm just overloaded.
I actually had an Indian client that was sitting behind in a RAM, behind a RAM, and he asked me, was that made by an Indian company because of the word RAM? And I was like, yeah, I don't think you guys could ever handle driving that in India.
No, it wouldn't work that well. But anyway, thank you very much, Henry. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. My name's Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here talking about cars, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. I'm especially good at, Mark, my husband and I disagree about this. I'm really good with that. In my past life, I was a marriage counselor, and I'm just probably the best there is. Nevertheless, my wife would kill me if she heard me say that. Nevertheless, you know, there's guys out there like me that are old gray-haired guys. Some of us don't even have any hair. But we've been around a long time. We started in the 60s and 70s, and so we've been through all the processes, all the ignition system, all the fuel system, stuff like that. There's a lot of us, that are Hitlers. We all know right from wrong, and we expect our employees to do the same and know the same. Most of us, you get one chance, and this ain't bowling, and this ain't baseball. You don't get 11 or 12 strikes, and you don't get 3. You're gone after 2. So if you take advantage of a customer or you lie about the diagnosis, you plug something in but you want 2 hours to fix it, that's easy for us to figure out. Blackwell Automotives is my twin brother. He probably isn't as astute on the radio as I am, but then he doesn't have the experience that I have. Tom's up at 40th and Greenway. He knows right from wrong. He's really a good technician. He's really a good boss. But you might find somebody that's worked for him that doesn't like him, and that's okay. But if you want somebody who's a straight shooter in that whole northeast Scottsdale area, 40th and Greenway, Tom Blackwell, north of Greenway, west side of 40th Street, he's a good guy. Okay, who we got next, Gil?
We have Dave.
Dave, good morning.
Hi. Question I had, you guys just hit a hot button with me with the charcoal canister underneath the hood.
Uh-huh.
Well, I got a 52 Chevy pickup truck with an 88 Chevy S10 Blazer underneath it, and I've got a line that would go to a charcoal canister, but I don't have a charcoal canister. What should I do with the line?
Well,
can I plug it? Is that going to affect the TBI, is that going to affect anything?
Well, I'm assuming that you have a computer in that, and I'm assuming you have an oxygen sensor in the tailpipe, and you have fuel injection or a carburetor with a mixture control solenoid
Fuel inject TBI, stock 4.3 V6.
Okay, all right. That line's probably going to pull fumes off the top of the tank. And so the answer is if you don't have a canister, then start it up, put your finger over the end of it. It should not have any vacuum, and stick a 5/16 bolt in there, and you'll be set.
You read my mind. Thank you very much.
All righty. Good luck, Dave.
Bye.
We just broke the law, and I'm telling him how to avoid emissions, but really on a 52 Chevy pickup. Let me explain. A 52 Chevy pickup, if you lock yourself in your garage and your intended is to go to the next country or go to the next level of life, you're going to die after about 5 minutes with this 52 Chevy truck. If you take a newer car, 2018 or 2019, and you lock yourself in the garage, you're going to die of starvation before you die of carbon monoxide poisoning. You'll be in there for a very, very long time. So his truck, you don't wrap your lips around the exhaust pipe. On a new one, you might burn your lips, but that would be about all there is. So that's what it's all about. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Okay. As I go around this state and stuff, I listened to an automotive radio show the other day, and this is what the guy said. He was a shop owner. He was the host of the shop. He says, really and truly, you need to come in often. He says, I need to look at your car. I need to, you know, find out what's wrong. Okay. He says, we're going to put synthetic oil in it, but we're going to bring you back every 5,000 miles. We just can't have you go 10 to 15,000 miles. So we're going to put the very best oil in, but we're going to change it every 5. Well, that's just raise your hand and say you're a bandit. Raise your hand and say, I don't know anything about what I'm talking about. Raise your hand and say, I'm taking advantage of you. Folks, if you got synthetic oil in there, depends on your mileage, you're going to go 10 to 12,000 miles. Now, got a customer that does 10 to 12,000? Boom. I'm in April. Bring your car in April. You go through the summer with fresh oil. You go the whole year. I get to change your oils once a year. If I tell you I'm going to put synthetic in it, you're going to love me. But if I tell you to bring it in every 5,000 miles, it's a reoccurring sales opportunity. Reoccurring sales opportunity. An RSO. That's what it's about in our industry, is creating the perception that bring your car in and we're going to make sure it never breaks down. Folks, that's BS. You know it and I know it. So then if you bring it in on a regular basis, which is 5,000 miles, he's going to change oil at 5,000 miles. You can use the cheapest oil God made and you'd make it 5,000 miles in today's cars. So it's not really necessary for you. If he's going to bring in every 5,000, then put a 5,000-mile oil in there. Why are we going to put a 10, 12,000-mile oil in there and then drain it out at 5? So he can look at your car. Then he says, during the oil change, we're going to make sure that everything's all checked, and we're going to check all your bushings and all this. Yeah, he's going to make sure you're lubed up all right. The idea is this is a search mission. You bring your car in, and we're going to find something wrong to do. Now, even more, this... You can tell my underwear kind of wound up about this. How many times should your car visit the repair shop in a year? Well, he's already got you locked down to at least three, maybe four. What causes the alternator to fail prematurely? Oh, God. Help me. What causes the alternator to fail prematurely? I don't even know. I don't. It's not going to be the belt. Either it's driving the alternator or it's not. When alternators fail, the rectifier bridge fails, the diodes fail, the armature fails, the fields fail, the front bearing, the back bushing, who cares? When it goes bad, no one knows it's going to go bad. Now, if you bring your car in for an oil change and we start it up and the alternator's growling, then we unplug it and go, oh, the growl goes away, then that means we've got a load problem in the alternator. But the idea is that you replace the alternator when it's bad. Anybody wants to replace your alternator based on mileage, has his interest in front of your own. Why choose an auto repair shop to call home? You should choose an auto repair shop to call home, and they could save you from needing your car towed. You know, unless the steel's hanging out of your tire, unless the belt looks like a shoelace, unless you're leaking oil faster than I can put it in your car, no one knows when your car's going to break down. If that's the case, I wouldn't have towing insurance on my cars, on all my shop cars, and my wife's cars, and my kids' cars. If I could determine when a car was going to break down, why would I be here? Why wouldn't I go to Las Vegas? If there's obvious issues that you ignore, then yeah, it's going to break down, and it's really your fault. But the idea is for you to go in and have your with the intention of having your shop saying, well, these lower control arm bushings are going to be bad in the next 5,000 miles, 6,000 miles, so you need to bring it back in and have us do it. And you say, well, what's the symptoms of a bad lower control arm bushings? If they go, they don't know. But if they say, hey, it'll have a knock when you hit a bump. Knock, 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 knock. And you say, okay, well, I don't have that yet, so I'll bring it in when I have that. That's the kind of conversation. So he says, 2012 Honda, my fluid brake light has been coming on intermittently following significant pressure. I'm assuming that hard braking. Should I be safe to tow it in, or can I bring it into the shop in a few days? Well, if the light's red, then you don't want to drive it, especially if it's the brake light. And so red means stop now. Yellow means you're okay. Caution. Don't be stupid. Don't run up behind somebody at 40, 50 miles an hour at a red light and think you're going to stop. Don't do that. So it really makes a difference on whose interest does the shop have first, his or yours. And I can tell you, you know when you read this kind of crap, what his interests are. He's got his in front of yours, but he wants you to hang around because he loves you. 602-508-0960. Four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, if you'd like to join us, if you have a car question or a car problem, and you would give me your make and model and tell me what the symptoms are, and we'll talk about that kind of stuff, then 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If your wife says A and you say B, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in the Valley since 1968. It's the only transmission repair shop I can recommend if you live in Phoenix. The idea is you better have somebody who's been around the block, because transmissions have gone from some big gearbox that shifted either with your foot or with engine vacuum, or it's got some kind of a flywheel mechanism that after this speed it shifts you to the second. Today, it's altogether different. Today we use electronic solenoids to put you in park, neutral, reverse, drive one, drive two, drive three, four, five, six, seven. The idea is that this computer is looking at a lot of things. Why is that good? Number one, the fuel economy is good. Number two, makes it a little easier to diagnose it. So the idea is sometimes it's a solenoid, sometimes it's got dirt in it, sometimes it needs to be flushed, and every once in a while it needs to be overhauled. So Automatic Transmission Exchange is on Washington and 40th Street. Been around a very long time, since 1968. So if you have a transmission problem, they'll drive with you. They'll go with you while you show them the problem. Just don't do it on Monday morning and Friday afternoons for obvious reasons. Okay, Gil, who we got?
We have Mike.
Mike, good morning.
Good morning. I've got a Stingray Corvette. year is 2014.
Okay.
And when I turn the vehicle off, I get this knocking noise, kind of a metallic knocking noise when I turn the vehicle off.
Okay. Does it happen cold and hot or just hot?
Does it happen cold or hot or just hot? Always.
Okay. All right. That's a very, and it's a 2014, you said.
Yeah, and recently, this helps. We had a radiator leaking pipe, coolant leaking all over the place. We took it in. They replaced the hose and fixed it. And then the knocking noise was happening during and is still happening after that episode.
Okay. You know, there used to be a time in a carbureted car when the idle was set too fast, and when you shut off the key, the engine would kind of run for a while, and people said it sounded like the engine was running backwards. That's called dieseling. Fuel injection vehicles should not really do that. I'm surprised. That's why I ask you about the year. And this noise doesn't happen until you turn the car off, right?
Right. It doesn't happen until I turn the car off.
Okay. No other time, hot or cold?
Well, let me tell you something else.
Okay.
We have noticed that the car runs ugly, or sounds ugly. When, Julie? My wife's right next to me.
Okay.
And we use regular gas, by the way. But it does sound rough, you said the other day, right?
Okay.
And it just does sound like it's running rough.
Okay. I can only discuss the possibilities. First of all, regular doesn't make any difference. Let me tell you about regular and
I've
super.
Heard your shows. Yeah. I've heard your shows. I totally believe you. Yeah.
Buy the cheapest you can get. I'm asking you if it doesn't on hard throttle, because then it's a pre-ignition, but your Corvette has a knock sensor and you should never hear that. I ask you if it happens when you're driving it from the time you start it till the time you shut it off, and if there's any noise there. And I haven't heard that there is. So I'm confused about what it is, but I'll tell you what sometimes happens. Sometimes somebody gets in there with a screwdriver and decides that they want to raise or lower the idle.
2 minutes.
And then that opens up the butterflies. We'll have a little bit of fuel, and then when you shut it off, it won't shut off immediately. And then we have to go back through and synchronize the idle air control motor, the TPS, and the RPM. So it's something that we have to do with those. I can't tell you. What part of town do you live in?
I live in the West Valley, Litchfield Park.
Okay. I'd probably take it over to 38th Avenue and Indian School and have Bob or Jeremy just listen to it. As long as you can duplicate it, they can listen to it. Now, this could also be, it can be a starter hanging up, because you aren't doing anything with the starter. So shutting it off is just shutting it off. You've stumped me. I bet I could guess what it is, but I think we need to hear it. And how is it related to the radiator hose, but
1 minute.
The answer to that's going to be this. After you get it fixed, everybody will know if it's related to the cooling system work you had. I doubt if it is, but I just don't know. So anyway, you just take it by, you know what, any shop you want, just say, hey, can you come out and listen to this noise for me, please?
Right.
And to take them out there and start it up. And I don't even have to drive around the block, okay? I'm just going to do it right here. And they'll give you a hug, because everybody else wants to steal a technician for the next 2.5 years. So just do something like that and see what happens. And you know what? If you wouldn't mind, call me back and let me know what it is, or send me an email, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Because I'd love to hear what the heck ends up fixing your car. Okay, thank you very much, Mike. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open. We have 5 of them. You're welcome to jump in if you have a car question or a car problem. Or if you have something about a new car, this car versus that car, all that kind of jazz, I can help you. Forty-three minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12 talking about car repair, but just anything to do with cars, old cars, new cars, diesel cars, all that kind of stuff. Kurt's Auto Repairs at I-17 in Bell. He's on the northeast corner. Kurt's is a good guy. He's a guy that has pulled a rabbit out of his hat more than he's delivered bad news. A lady has 3 estimates from other shops about needing an engine, and Kurt put an oil pressure switch on it. She left there for less than $100. Symptom gone, problem solved. It didn't need a motor. That's the kind of guy Kurt is. He also has two young guys working for him, Jeff and Eric. They're all master technicians. So if you need a good repair shop, and perhaps you don't have one, then northeast corner, Bell and I-17, Kurt's Auto is a good place to start. It's 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you certainly can. Car repair is all about symptoms, and we verify what you say, and then we diagnose it, then we get an estimate together, and most of us are going to give you an estimate that's going to be higher than the end result. Now, you got to add 10% for sales tax. You got to add a certain percentage, depending on your stuff, how you do it, for shop supplies and environmental charges, and then you have to put a little bit of fluff in there. I'm proud to tell you that most of the shops that I know, including my own, we always overbid. Always. For two reasons. Number one, when you come in and we bid it at, I don't know, $550, and you come in and it's $528, you're happy. But it also gives us $20 in case we need a couple of clamps, or if we need this, or we need that. Now, not too long ago, and this has never happened before, but this is kind of works, dovetails right into this. I had a young man, or an older man, I don't know, some man called me from Pennsylvania and wanted to talk to the boss. Hey, how can I help you? My mother's been coming to you, and you've been ripping her off and all this kind of stuff, and I'm thinking, oh, I wish I had a breathalyzer on this phone right now. So I pull up his mother's account, and I say, okay, well, give me an example. Why? He just keeps talking, and he doesn't give me any specifics. He's just mad because we're ripping off his mother. So I said, well, just give me a minute here. So I called my daughter, and I said, take up Mrs. Jones and do, I want a total on all the estimates and a total on all the actual. So I'm talking to him, and we're talking about all kind, but we can't talk intelligently because he doesn't have any examples. He just knows I've ripped his mother off. So Andy, my daughter, walks back inside, and she hands me two numbers. Now, this lady's been doing business with us for a very, very long time. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I'll pretend I do. So I say to him, here's kind of what's important to me. We've given your mother $2,500 worth of estimates. It could have been $10,000 for all I know, but let's use $2,500. $2,500 worth of estimates. And if you add up to her total amount comes to $2,150. If I was ripping your mother off, wouldn't I clip her for that $300, $400 that I left on the table? After all, she agreed to $25. Why isn't my bill $2,444.99? Why isn't it that? So after more time than I should have given him, I said, okay, well, I got to end this conversation. You don't have any specifics, but thanks for calling. Goodbye. So then I called the lady, and I said, you know, your son just called me, and he's upset about us ripping you off. So I want you to know that you can take our bills anywhere you want. Just block out the numbers, hand them the ticket, and say, here, you bid it. I feel pretty comfortable that we're in the ballpark. I also told your son that you had, okay, $2,500 worth of work since you've been doing business with us, and we hit you at $21. So we left just under $400 on the table. And we do that just for you. And we do it because we benefit because you like us more. And it gives us some fluff so I don't have to call you back for something that I need $20 more. So she says, could you tell if he's been drinking? Now, what do you answer to that? She wouldn't have asked you that had she not known something. So I said, you know, I couldn't smell his breath over the phone, but Mrs. Johnson, I got to go, but thank you very much. What do you say to that? Anyway, that's a life in the day of Mark Salem. I have really good customers. I have good vendors. I am surrounded by people that have been around me for 40 years, and we all understand one another. From a business point of view, I'll give you, many of you out there are business owners. It started off with one big vendor that we spend a lot of money with, sometimes $30,000 a month, the parts vendor. So I happened to meet one of the girls that's in charge of the billing, and I said, hey, what time do you close my account? She says, well, we close your account on the 26th of the month. And I said, okay, you bill me on the 10th. Yes. And how many days do I have to pay it? She says, 30. So basically, I've got, what, 4 weeks or 5 weeks there to pay you? She says, yeah, you do. I said, okay, here's my deal. Here's my offer to you. I know you got to pay 1 or 2 points on a credit card, but more than likely your credit card average is kind of high, like mine is, and as a result of that, you're not paying 3, 4, 5, 6, 7%. So I'm paying 1.8 blended all the way across the board. So the rewards cards are killing this, by the way, because you get, you know, $2 back for every dollar you spend or whatever. So I said, hey, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you a credit card, and I want you to bill me the day after you close my account. You close my account on the 26th, boom, you bill me on the 27th. And she says, why would I do that? And I said, well, you don't have to wait 4 weeks for your money. She says, well, let me run up the flagpole. She calls back, and she says, they think that's the dumbest idea they've ever heard, but they said, yeah. And I said, fine, we'll do that. So my wife and daughter say, why did you do that? And I said, well, we just took, and this sounds like a commercial, but I don't mean it that way. We just took a Capital Venture card, and we got rid of our Chase card because they made us really mad after 470 years. So I got a, and I said, we get frequent flyer miles, and right now the family seems to be traveling a lot. So I thought that would be the best deal. So we've gone to each one of our vendors, and we've said to them the same thing. Now, a couple of them said, no, we don't want to do the credit card stuff. Well, okay, fine. Virtually all the rest of them have said, yeah. So what it does is it gives me some flyer miles, and obviously I become one of their nicest and best customers because I'm the only dog in the yard that's paying them a day after they close my account. Now, all of them do that differently. Some of them close the account on the 5th of the month, and they bill me on the 10th or the 15th of the month. I don't really care how it is. You got my credit card. You bill me. You don't have to wait for a check. I don't have to write a check. Boom, we're done. I copied that from another guy in Dallas, Texas. He was very successful. I happened to have dinner in his presence one time, and he was telling that story. So I thought, got nothing to do. Let me try that. So this is a car show, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to be here for another hour after this one's over in 9 minutes. But if you have a car question, 602-508-0960. Real quick, let me tell you, if you're into a four-wheeler and you want a kind of a starter one, my daughter has a 2005 Yamaha Rhino 660. 660 is the size of the motor. It's camouflage. It's a two-seater, but it's four-wheel drive. She has all the maintenance records, all of the maintenance up to date. She has an oil change 100 miles ago. She has Bighorn tires that are brand new, and they have about 400 miles on them. And she has the stock set of tires and wheels. So you got 8 tires and 8 wheels. It has a Rigid light bar, which is a very expensive light bar, but we happen to be a distributor for Rigid. It has LED headlights. We happen to be a distributor for the headlights. It has an electric fuel pump because the Rhino's notoriously kind of hard to start when it's cold. The reason why is it has this old-fashioned fuel pump that you have to crank it over for a while to suck push, and we've just put an electric one in there. When you hit the key, the electric fires up and it starts a lot quicker. It has 2100 miles on it. It has 563 hours. You do the division, this thing has a 3.8 average mile per hour. It's been off road a lot. So she's asking $4,500 her best offer. If you're interested in a Rhino, say you got a cabin up north and you're interested, it's only a two-seater but has a bed in the back, which is not where you'd put your grandkids. What we've got in the bed is a fuel tank, an extra fuel tank, and it's got a nozzle and a hose. So if you run out of fuel, you can just grab the nozzle, fill up your tank yourself. You could put all kinds of stuff back there if you wanted to. You could probably put a small seat with some seat belts back there, but I think you'd want a roll bar in it. So anyway, and I think it's a 2006-5, she said. So it's 14 years old. It's been stored in her garage ever since day one. So if you're interested, then send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, and I'll put you in touch with my daughter, Andy, and that's her vehicle. So when it comes to car repair, the real key is we do the symptoms, and then we do the diagnosis, and then we bid the work, and then we do the work, and then we verify the symptoms are gone. That's the 5 steps that really good shops do. There's no excuse for you bringing it in, and we tell you, this is going to fix it. A is going to fix it. And when you leave, you have A still. And most of you know what that feels like. So there has to be a verification of the symptoms, unless the shop says, you can't duplicate it, so you know, it's going da, 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 on a right turn on the freeway, but it doesn't do it on the left turn. That sounds like a wheel bearing. You got 200,000 miles on your car. How about we replace all the wheel bearings on the front end? I can't promise that's going to fix your car, but based on your symptoms, that's an educated guess. Or the other option is wait till it gets worse and easier to find. That's it. Wait till it gets worse and easier to find. That's how it should be. And as far as estimates are concerned, there really is no reason why we should be a significant amount over the number we gave you. There's still lots of people out there that are going to just add up parts and labor and give you the dollar value, but we got 10% sales tax. We got another 10% for shop supplies and environmental charges. That's 20%. So on a bill, it could be 20% difference. That's why sales tax, shop supplies, environmental charges, all that kind of stuff should be rolled into one. Every once in a while, I get somebody who gets their underwear wadded up about shop supplies and environmental charges. I have to pay to haul your oil away. And sometimes I pay a penny a gallon and my tank holds 5,000 gallons. I have to pay to have we squeeze the oil out of your oil filters, but I have to pay to have those taken away. I have to pay for carb clean and brake clean. I have to pay for floor mats. I have to pay for gloves. All of this stuff is uncompensated. It's the cost of doing business. And so environmental services, I can tell you on the environmental side, most of us are running money in and out pretty doggone close. We kind of know what we're spending for environmental services, and so that's divided by your average amount of cars per month or per year, however you want to do it. Shop supplies, environmental charges, kind of the same. Shop supplies is all of those things we use to fix your car that we can't possibly bill you for. The lube, when we spray your hinges on your door, we can't charge you. Carb clean, brake spring, covers for your steering wheel, silicone gasket sealer, nuts and bolts that we can't possibly determine prices on, so we have a big cabinet and we just put them on your car. So those are the kinds of things, but we all should know the difference. So if your shop's not giving you an out the door price, you ask them. So they call you up and say, hey, your repair's going to be $800. Okay, well, how much do I have to write my check for before I get there? My answer, and many other shops' answer, is I just told you. You can write it there, and I'll give you the difference in cash. But that's going to cover it. Now, does a shop going to call you every once in a while? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. Sometimes you get into it, and you got valve cover gaskets, and I'm using stupid examples. Valve cover gaskets are leaking. You pull the valve cover off. You can see that why the valve cover's a little bit bent, and the gasket's been squished, and the gasket's been over-tightened. Oh, but you find that this rocker has pulled out of the head, and the stud is a good eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch higher than all the rest of them. So now you call back and you say, hey, I got this stud pulling out of the head. I'd like to pull the stud. I'd like to put a threaded one in. I got to drill and tap it. That way the stud won't come out again. Have you noticed a tap-it noise intermittently? Yes, I have. Does it come and go? Yes, it does. Is it worse cold than hot? Yes. Okay, well, that's this rocker arm assembly. And obviously when it's cold, it's going to make a little more noise than when it's warm when metal expands. So there's a repair I'd like to do while I'm here. And if you don't do it today, there'll be a duplication of labor down the road. So I got to pull the valve cover back off, put a new gasket back on, and do the stud. That's a stupid example. I probably lost a lot of you in that example. But the idea is I found something on my way in or my way out. That happens maybe 1 out of 10 cars, I'm thinking. 1 out of 10 cars, there's some kind of an unexpected expense when you take it apart. Like a clutch, the flywheel's burnt beyond belief. I need to replace the flywheel. I didn't know that till I took it apart. Those are the kinds of things that you have. But you should always say, my husband's kind of crazy. Put the old parts in the trunk for me, okay? Just wrap them up in paper. Always do that. Always. Every once in a while, the shop will give you lower control arm bushings for a Honda, and you're driving a Chevrolet. That could be a problem. Always ask for your old parts back. We got another hour of car repair if you want to load up the lines. There's 5 available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We'll be back in another 15 minutes.
And here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join us again, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're a car show. There's ladies and men and young men and young women call us and ask us questions that typically are discussed over the dinner table, or typically a problem that came up that they want help with. Those are the kind of questions. 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Auto Repairs at 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's been there, I think, since Fred Flintstone was first making cars. Bob and Ellen own and operate Harker's Automotive. Ellen runs the front. Bob runs the back. Bob's a master tech. But Jeremy, which is a relative of Bob, I think he's the son-in-law, Jeremy is a master mechanic. He's passed every single automotive test that they have, which includes paint and body, big trucks, motorhomes, farm equipment, everything imaginable. I'm a master technician in cars and trucks. Not big ones, just normal cars and trucks that we see every day. This kid has them all. So he has an understanding of the fundamentals in everything that ever has driven down the road or has had an exhaust pipe, and probably a lot of electrical as well. So if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School and you're looking for a car repair shop, then Harker's Automotive would be it. Now, let me also tell you that they are the kind of shop that you would go to. Now, there's the three or four, five shops in town that are would be this same way, but if every time you honk the horn you hear a duck quack and nobody's been able to fix that, Harker's can. They have the tenacity necessary to pull that off. When we have car repair, there's some rules that I'd like to share with you about successful car repair. First of all, if you're going to start a new shop, just go on the lines and type in their name and use the word reviews. Look over some of their reviews. If you see cost issues on a regular basis, that should be a warning sign. Usually people are saying that they've charged, you know, three times what the auto parts store in the neighborhood has. But let me draw the distinction there for you. First of all, auto parts are sourced from a variety of places, and the markup is typically 30 or 40%. Unless, of course, you buy it from dealers, and then we buy it maybe at a 10% discount that you would buy it. And oftentimes, we add to that 10%. We might go to 20 or 25%. It's just an issue that that's the way it is. Now, I'm only going to speak for my shop, but customers will say every once in a while, it happens five times a year, well, I went to a place on the internet and I found that this part is $40 and you charged me $65. And this is what many of us are doing now. We say, you've been a customer of ours for a very long time, so I'm going to give you one freebie. I'm going to let you bring your own part one time. Now, I would strongly suggest you not bring an oil filter, because there's not a significant savings there. But you might want to hang on for something big, like an air conditioning compressor or a radiator or a front rack and pinion, something like that. Now, you can only do that once. You can only do that once. But save the favor. And I'm going to put it in your file right here. And so I'm telling you, you can bring your own part one time. Not too long ago, we rewrote our software, and my daughter was talking to me, and she was part of that team that did that. She says, Dad, do you, and of course, when you come in and exercise your right for that, then we eliminate the message in there, or we'll put on used on this date. She says, Dad, you can't believe all the people that have that message in there that says they can bring their own parts one time. And I said, I know. And she says, but then why do you do it if nobody's using it? And I said, well, it makes me look pretty good. But at the same time, everybody's waiting for the big one. And the big one never comes. So this whole thing started over an alternator. But in reality, the big one, we only do a big one maybe once a week. And we might probably process 40, 50, 60 cars a month. So your chances of having the big one are pretty slim. We have some older guys that want to use AMSOIL, and we don't stock that oil. So most of the time, if you've been a customer of ours for a long time, the answer is yes, bring your own oil. We're not going to care. But we aren't going to let you walk into our lobby the first time and bring your box of parts and instruct us to install your parts and not share the diagnosis with us. Because what happens time and time again is these hairy-chested guys that know everything about parts, and they're usually an engineer and they don't know nothing about car repair. The engineer, his wife will come in and they'll throw a box of parts on the counter and say, you know, we want you to fix this. Well, if we install all those parts and the symptom's not gone, it's our fault. So that's after 40 years, I've figured that out. So the fact of the matter, I'm not doing that. I'm just not doing that. I'm not working off somebody else's diagnosis. Now, if you want to pay me, I'll verify their diagnosis and I'll tell you, yes, I agree, or no, I don't, and here's why. But the idea of you bringing in a bunch of parts and setting them on, front end, we see that all the time. Tie rod ends, lower ball joints, upper ball joints, sway arm bushings, idlers, tie rods, everything imaginable, they'll come in and set it there and rebuild the front end. And we'll say, what do you got? And they go, I've got a noise. Is it a clunk? No. It's a hum. So you want me to replace the entire front suspension for a hum? You need to let's turn that around. Mark, how many times have you fixed a hum by replacing any component of the front steering system? Never. So, you know, there's too many good customers out there to have to deal with people that want to step outside the circle. And frankly, we run into one of those a year, so it's not something that's a big deal. Who we got on the phone?
We have John.
John, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, my aunt has a 2004 Ford Freestar. It only has 37,000 miles, 10 years. First 10 years it was in Nebraska. And the back rear brakes, the rotors are kind of gouged. The brakes drag, and the pads are down to like an eighth of an inch. So I'm going to replace the rotors and the pads, but I'm wondering, is there something wrong with the caliper?
Oh, I can answer that for you really easy.
Excellent.
Okay. If the inboard pad is worn significantly more than the outboard pad, you need to replace the calipers. As the piston and the caliper comes out, it pushes on the inner pad. If the caliper's all rusted up, if the caliper is all uglied up, then the piston comes out. But we count on that little bit. Now, a hair is 3,000 thick. We want the wobble to push the piston away 3,000ths, the thickness of a piece of paper, so it doesn't rub on the pad. So this is all engineered into the car. So the inner pad worn substantially more than the outer pad, you better hang calipers on both sides. Now, if the outer pad is worn more than the inner pad, then you need a hardware kit. And it'll come with a couple of pins and some anti-rattle springs. So you can read the brake pads, looking at the difference. Now, I'm not talking about something that's insignificant. There's always going to be a little difference, but I'm talking real significant. The inboard pad is it's three times thinner than the outboard pad. That's what I'm looking for. So that's the answer to your question.
So if it's the same, it's not a problem. You say if the outside one's thinner than a kit to rebuild to fix the caliper itself?
Well, there's two pins, and in the caliper goes back and forth on these pins. And when the pins get all rusty and ugly, then the caliper doesn't come off that outboard pad. It hangs up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it eats the outside pad. And so the hardware kit's $20, maybe 30.
It's just okay, so the hardware kit is just the pins are
rusted up. It's the pins and the anti-rattle springs that sit up on top of the pads.
Rattle springs.
So, and there might be a tube of boogers in there for you to smear on those pins. So,
sure, hope so.
All righty.
Excellent, thank you.
You're welcome. That's why my wife didn't want... She says, I don't want to do the radio show because you always do stupid stuff. And so, yeah, I used boogers, okay? And that's all there is to it. Who's next?
Brian.
Brian, good morning.
Good morning. I appreciate you taking the call.
You bet.
I've got a 2004 Toyota Highlander. Bought it about 6 years ago with 120,000 on it. I've put 135 on it since then. And I've had it fairly regularly maintained at a big dealership. And the last time I took it in, they said the lower control arm on the left side needs to be replaced because the bushing is going bad. And I heard you mention the bushings about the Chevy and the Honda. So it made me want to call you. They also said I need to get new struts on there. So I'm just curious, can the bushing be replaced without the whole control arm? The quote on it was about $1,600, $1,700 for the control arm replacement, and I think about $1,000 for the strut.
Wow. Well,
this, and I'm wondering if I should even spend the money on this old car too. So.
I think you just need a second opinion. Just get a second opinion. First of all, you're never going to get towed because the lower control arm bushing is bad. You're never going to need a tow truck if the shock absorber, front struts or shocks are bad. So I'll just put you in that kind of a comfort zone, okay? It's been a long time since somebody's... Now, if your 16-year-old son hits a parking block at 15 miles an hour, he'll knock the lower control arms off of it. But I'm not talking about that. The lower control arm, this is what aggravates me. And you should be ashamed of yourself calling me about this, Brian, because you just raised my blood pressure. Brian, your lower control arm bushings, they're cracked. They're just old looking. They're a little bit fragile. They have, you can see where they've been moving. For $1,600, would you let me replace those? Well, let me ask you a question. If they go bad and when they go bad, what symptom am I going to have?
1 minute.
I hear a rubbing noise is what I hear.
That's what you're going to hear. Now, if you ask a service writer that at most of the places that have a service writer this long way away from the shop, they won't know. Here's the answer to your question. The lower control mind bushings, when they're bad, it's going to clunk every time you hit a bump. Tick, 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 or clunk, clunk. And you'll know. And then you and your wife switch places. She drives and you're sitting in the passenger side, and the two of you will figure out it's the left front or the right front in about, 15 minutes.
It's the left front, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Are you getting the clunk on the left front?
Well, I'm hearing a constant, as we go over bumps and stuff, I hear a rubbing.
Okay. It's not going to be a rubbing noise. It's going to be a clunk. The bushing is between two pieces of metal, and when the bushing goes, but here's the problem. Your bushing is, here's a better example. You have a power steering leak. Is it leaking, weeping, seeping, wet? Which one is it? You'd be surprised how people go, oh, the front seal on your power steering pump is bad. And you go, well, I haven't seen anything on the ground. I haven't had any power steering, added any fluid to it. Oh, no, it's leaking out of the front. So those are the words we use in our industry. And not, I'm talking about the bottom 20%. And I'm not talking about your dealer either. But they're between the dealers and the independent repair shops and the chain stores and the mom and pop place, they all are guilty of this. The weeping, seeping, leaking, and wet kind of condition. So, I don't know if you can do those bearing bushings. I don't know, but I'm betting you can. I'm thinking there's a 60% chance you can. There might be a labor savings if you just change the whole lower control arm. So, it's got three bushings on it, so it's gonna have two on the inboard side and maybe one on the outboard side. And you gotta take it off and you gotta hammer out the bushings and put new bushings in it, so maybe they're thinking I'll just use the whole assembly. I usually say to the customer, and you said you had 250,000 miles on this, but the lower control arm, it's not going to wear out itself. But I'm thinking out loud here, the lower control arm is almost always going to come with the ball joint. So given the 250,000 miles, I'd probably put a lower control arm on it because you're going to get two new bushings and the ball joint. And I don't have to realign it either because the ball joint wouldn't have anything to do with that. So as I think out loud, I'm thinking, well, there's a lot to it. The other thing you had was, what else was there?
The struts.
Okay. The struts are up to you. I can tell you this much. I promise you this is the truth. I've been doing this for 40 years. We've spent thousands of dollars doing struts. And so the question is this. I'll follow up, not everybody, but I'll follow up 2 or 3 weeks later. Hey, can you tell the difference in the ride? 90% of the people said yes. I say to them, was it worth the $2,300? And 90% of them say no. And that's the way it is. That's the way it is. A lot of them say no, there's no different in ride. Uh-oh. There should be a difference.
This truck drives perfectly. I mean, everything's perfect.
Okay.
Except when, if you go over a bump on a large, bridge type thing, and the front end may a couple times.
Okay. So, and that... that has to do with the struts. So, you know, I don't know. It, based on what you said, if you want to take my grandkids to Colorado and go skiing, I'll let them go with you in that car. How's that?
Okay.
Okay? All right.
I needed to know.
Thank you very much, Brian. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12 talking about car repair problems and stuff like that. You're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We just listened to a spot about Phoenix Body Works, and let me tell you, I practice what I preach. One of my employees knocked the left rear fender off my Dodge Dually, and it's at Phoenix Body Works today. Not because he's giving me a deal. Not because my insurance company loves him. I took it there because I knew he'd do the very best job for me. I know. And one of the things that did happen on that conversation was, hey, Greg, I just knocked the fender off the back bed of the Dually, and I already ordered the fender, but, you know, is it just like plug and play? Just unbolt it and bolt it back on? He goes, no. I said, what is it? And he goes, you got to cut it out and weld it back on. I said, okay, I'm bringing it to you because there's no way I know what I'm doing there. So there was a lot of things that needed to be done that I would have never known. But nevertheless, I'm going to be happy with it. They should deliver it probably Wednesday or Thursday of next week. And then I'm going to take it down and have the wrap repaired. But I'm practice what I preach. Now, there's another shop right around the corner from him, Action Auto Repair, that does auto repair. He's on I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. Tom's been open since 1983, and I've known Tom since the early 80s, 81, 82, or 83. I like him. He's exactly the kind of guy. He's married, but he's exactly the kind of guy you want your daughter to bring home. He's that kind of a guy. So if you're up near Deer Valley and I-17 and you don't have a repair shop, the northwest corner is called Action Auto Repair. And who might be calling next, Gil?
That would be Wayne.
Wayne, good morning.
Good morning. Got a 2000 Dodge Caravan that's the short body, and it has the 2.4 liter engine in it and 127,000 miles. At times, you hit a bump, and it seems like there's a shimmy, and it seems like it's more in the right front. Try to drive over lane markers or duplicate the things, and most times you can't duplicate it. But your thoughts on that?
Well, do you work on your own cars?
Not anything significant other than
okay.
Brakes.
Fair enough.
Change coolant.
Oh, does your wife love you?
I hope so. 57 years.
Okay. All right. The reason I ask you is you're going to lay down in front of the car. So you're going to lay down in front of the car, and you're going to put your hands on both front tires. You're going to have her start it up with the parking brake on, and she's going to put her hand at 12 o'clock on the steering wheel. And when she tells you, when you tell her, she's going to go a couple inches to the right and then back to center and a couple inches to the left and back to center. You're going to close your eyes underneath the car in case she decides to run you over. You don't want to know how you die. And you're going to close your eyes and you're going to feel those two tires with your hands. And if one tire moves before the other, that's your shimmy. The question is where is it coming from? You can look at the moving parts underneath the suspension of that caravan, and you're going to see the top part of a ball joint move before the bottom part does, or vice versa. You're going to see the rack moving left and right in its mounts. You're going to see something like that, but especially the shimmy is the key. The shimmy means, now, it could be an alignment issue where the tires are kind of outwards in the front, kind of like a duck, kind of like I walk. So what happens is the left one is straight, which kicks the right one out, and they'll fight about who's going to get to be the dominant one. So left, right,
right.
Left,
okay.
Right. So I've and then look at the tire wire while you're laying down on the floor. But that's how we do it. That's how we do it. So just lift it up on the rack, and somebody's up there, and they wiggle the steering wheel. But I'm going to have you do it on the ground because it'll be more predominant on the ground. So that's what I would do, and then you'll be able to see what's wrong, and you can decide if you want to do it yourself.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Wayne. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we got another caller.
That would be Jesse.
Jesse, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
How can I help you?
So I have a question. I just got back from basic training, and I finished all my training. I'm in the Marine Corps Reserves, and I have some money saved up, and I want to get a car. But I want something that's reliable and low maintenance, and under, like, $4,000, I can't decide if I want a truck or a car or not. What are your recommendations?
Do you have a repair shop you trust, a repair shop that your parents use, a repair shop that you've used in the past?
No, I live in South Scottsdale, so no, not really.
Okay. Is that where you live right now, South Scottsdale, in that area?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There's too many cars and trucks out there. Your $4,000 is going to be a car that's 100, 200,000 miles. What you're looking for is a one owner. You can go on to Consumer Reports and check to see which one historically has been good. So you don't want one with one stars or two stars. Mm-hmm. You want a 3, 4, or 5. I'd have a used car check over done on it, and they can tell you what it needs today, tomorrow, and next year. Basically, they're going to tell you what kind of maintenance you're up against. But if you have a couple of shops in the neighborhood, most all of us have customers who have older cars that fit your parameters, and we already know the car real well. And we probably are even shopping the car to our other customers on behalf of our other customers. There's a guy there on 87th and McDowell. It's called Bell Automotive. His name's Craig. He's real tall. His wife is Vicky. I think you should go in there and ask Craig if he knows any, or will he keep his eye out for a car that's around the $4,000 range. As far as low maintenance is concerned, it's how you drive it. It's how you take care of it. Even the worst cars in the world, if you take good care of them, they'll be okay. But this is kind of like a big pen. You're going to drive it until it dies and hope like heck that the cost at the end of the day is, what, $100 a month? So if that's really the way you have to look at it is, if I can drive this car X amount of months for $4,000 and the salvage on it's still worth $900, then I got $3,100 in it, so I'm at $100 a month. That's what it's all about. Okay?
So do you think I should get a truck or a car then?
I think you should find something that makes you happy for the amount of money you're looking at. And I got to get up against a break, but I want to say to you, thank you for your service. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you for offering to give your life for the rest of us to be free. And those people that don't like you, I want to say double than I love you for what you've done. So thank you very much. We'll be back right after this. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and real quick, let me talk about Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're up there on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak in North Scottsdale. Nate, who owns Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, is a diesel guy. They also do oil changes and stuff like that for the rest of your family cars, and they'll let you know what they're really good at and what they don't want to touch on your family cars. But if you've got a diesel, there is nothing. As long as it's a domestic light truck, foreign or domestic light diesel truck, there's nothing they can't do. So, diesel, as well as your wife's car, if it's not a diesel, either way, Strictly Diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Even though it says Strictly Diesel, he just now opened that other door up for his existing customers and their gasoline-powered cars. So, he's a good guy, Nate's a good guy, and if you have a diesel nobody else can fix, then give Nate a call. Let's go to the phones. Jody, thanks for calling. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. First of all, I'd like to say that I have used Salem Boys, and I've also used two of your recommended shops, and I'd like to thank you for being an honest business that can be counted on.
Thank you for that. Thank you. Just tell them now you're not my older brother.
No, I'm a little younger.
Okay.
Not much.
Okay.
I have an 06 Toyota Avalon Limited. I've had it probably 4 years or so. Obviously bought it used. It has various steering wheel controls. When I bought it, the temp controls, for the heater and ventilation system, were inoperable on the steering wheel. They worked perfectly on the dash. And so I didn't really care. More recently, the sensitivity control for the laser cruise control has stopped working about 90% of the time. Occasionally, I'll hit the button, and it will change the sensitivity level, but most of the time, it's just stuck on the most sensitive, which makes it harder to use.
Okay.
Originally, when I first bought the car, I had some stuff done in another shop, and they told me that there was an open circuit and something they called a spiral cable that comes from the steering wheel.
It's a clock spring.
I'm sorry, what?
It's called a clock spring.
Clock spring.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it controls everything on your steering wheel, your horn, your airbag, it everything. And just, it is a round spiral. One end is fastened stationary, and the other end moves with your steering wheel. And so the symptoms you describe, I'm 96.5% sure your clock spring needs to be replaced.
How big a job is that?
When I start a sentence, just don't misunderstand. We have to pull the horn pad, then we have to pull the steering wheel, and then sometimes we have to dig kind of deep to get this clock spring out. And typically, it's not inexpensive. So I can't guess on your car, but you could call a couple of shops and say, I've been diagnosed as a clock spring. Would you give me just the part and the labor? Call me back. Here's my cell phone. Or if you want to text me, here's my number. Make it as easy as you can on them. But I'm thinking, I'm going to guess, and this is a wild guess. I'm thinking 300, give or take 50. Uh-huh. That's what I'm thinking. So all your symptoms match that. Now, I want you to do this, okay? If this temporarily fixes your car, you better add dollars to the plate next time it passes. You're driving down the road, and you're trying to use your control to raise the audio and the volume or change your temperature or whatever, okay? You're driving down the road, 60, 70 miles an hour. The steering wheel straight ahead. The car's going straight ahead. If you can't get it, then with your left hand or your right hand, push the button, and with your other hand, hit the steering wheel real hard, just towards the dash. Don't hit it to make it go left or right. Just hit the 12 o'clock position hard. And I'll bet you're going to find out that you can actually make it work when it doesn't want to work. And if that's the case, I'm going to move from 96.5% to 100% that the clock spring needs to be replaced.
And if when I do that, the steering wheel breaks and I run off the road and end up upside down, should I call you back?
No. What's the name of that law firm? Dewey, Cheatham, and Howell?
Yeah. I have them on the screen.
Yeah. Call my lawyer, Well, how's that, Gil? How is that? Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. Dewey, D-E-W-E-Y, Cheatham, and Howe. Yeah, Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. You call them if you run off the road, because I said keep your right hand on the steering wheel. Don't jerk left and right and hit it hard. But anyway, Jody, I'm sure of that. If you can get those buttons to work intermittently when you beat on the steering wheel, if you're left-handed, you're pushing the buttons, then beat on the steering wheel with your right. If you go to somebody and you say, this is the issue and this is when I can make it work, then you're home free. We're going to take a break. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You can call in real quick. A good friend of mine, Gordy's on his motorhome. He's on the trip. He calls me and says, my cruise control doesn't work. I said, next time you're in your coach, do that. Hold your left hand in and just beat on the steering wheel. So he beats on the steering wheel. He calls me back and he goes, it's fixed. And I said, okay, well, good. You owe me $472. So his wife calls and she says, how long is it guaranteed for? And I said, you won't make it home from Ohio and the cruise control will go back out, but at least we know it's a connection underneath the steering wheel. So those are the kinds of diagnosis. Now, we're going to charge you for that kind of stuff because experience about knowing that stuff costs money. It's no different than the doctor diagnoses you with a, you know, kind of a snap of the fingers. But we still have to verify what you've done. So you can give them a clue, but keep in mind, it may make a small reduction in your diagnostic fee, but it's not going to be much because we still need to verify that the guy on the radio was right. We'll be back. So it's 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. I've got one caller. You can sneak in if you want, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars, and I'm going to do what I need to do with Bobby. Bobby, good morning.
Hey, Mark. I had a question about brakes. I got a 14 Mustang, and it has Brembo brakes in it, and I just changed out the pads and put brand new rotors on, Brembo rotors. My question is, when I come to a stop, just the very instant that the car comes to a complete stop, I get this little grunt sound just for a split second every time. And I was wondering if you knew what was causing that.
No, noises are hard to find, but here, can you make it happen every time you stop like that?
Every single time, yeah.
Okay,
And it happened as soon as I put the new pads on.
Okay.
It just goes, ah!
Okay. I want you to take your garden hose and wet down both the front brakes and go drive it a couple of times. And if the noise goes away, then we know for sure it has to do with the friction. And then I want you to take it out behind a Bash's shopping center on Sunday morning when nobody else is there and put your wife in the seat next to you and don't tell her and get going as fast as you can in that Mustang and then hammer the brakes a couple of times. And let's see.
You know, I did do that.
Okay.
And it did lessen the sound.
Okay.
It used to be more dramatic. Now it's almost gone, but it's still there.
Okay. Well, you didn't do what we would have done or what our industry would have done. We would have put those rotors on a lathe to make absolutely sure. But you didn't say the brake pedal's pulsating, so I don't think the rotors are out of round.
It's not pulsating. And they're brand new Brembo.
I understand that. And folks, he's talking about Brembo. It's this company that buys other people's parts and puts their name on them and tells everybody that they're top-notch, everything. But in reality, if you were working NASCAR, you might use them. But the issue is if you water down both the fronts and it quits it, then you can wait and see what happens because that's not going to leave you off the side of the road. It's not going to cause you any problem.
No.
We would have put a non-directional finish on both sides of the rotors, and we probably would have burnished the pads a little bit more than you have. But stuck with what you have. Go out and make some real good hard panic stops, which was my first suggestion. And if not, do you have a source of air? Do you have a small electric grinder with a wheel on it? Not a soft wheel, like a sanding wheel. Do you have one of those?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then just rotate the front rotors and put a non-directional finish on it. So basically, you're starting towards the center and you're sweeping towards the outside. Rotate the rotor all the way around and do that, and then you're going to have to pull the caliper to get the back one to get the back burnished.
Right.
But that's what I would do. But it's not anything that I'd really be worried about, other than the fact that I think a couple of hard stops would probably take care of it. So,
all right.
All righty.
Oh, just one other thing. That,
okay.
That law firm, what was that? Dewey, Scroom and Wise? what was it?
Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
Cheatham.
Yeah. Dewey, okay. Cheatham, and Howe.
All right. I was a little off there. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Bobby. I got to tell you, I get lots of calls from attorneys. They want to talk to me about so-and-so wrecked their car, and they say the brakes failed, and would you go look at the car, and all that kind of stuff. But they also call me on their car repair issues. So I had one call the other day, and he says, I took it to this garage that's close to by where I work. And this guy's a really nice guy, but he knows about as much about cars as the German Shepherd that's laying next to me right now. But he knows a lot about the law. So anyway, he takes it in, and they give him this big laundry list of things that he needs. So he calls me up, and I say, hey, look, just have them take some pictures and text them to you. Then you text them to me, and I'll text them to one of my techs. Because those little pictures on my little bitty flip phone don't really do me justice. I'm kidding you. So anyway, he did. He sent me pictures. I sent them to Eddie. I said, hey, I'm in the middle of a big report. I'm on page 11, and I don't have time for this. Tell me what you got. And he writes back, and he goes, we've got some sway bar bushings that are just wiped out. And I said, okay, fine. I says, did you happen to look for price? And he goes, yeah, as a matter of fact, I did. And he says, it's probably going to be between $150, give or take about $25. I said, okay, good. So I call him, and I say, yep, if the pictures they showed you are of your car, and we think they are, then yes, it needs sway bar bushings, and you should have had a clunk. He said, here's the problem. I just took it in for some other work, and I didn't have this clunk before. I said, what kind of work did they do? Oh, he said they did an oil change. I said, okay, we're going to lift the car up, and when we do, we're going to let all four wheels dangle. They rarely dangle. So the wheels are going to see the extreme down, and then when you hit a bump, they're going to be extreme up. Well, what they did is they repositioned the sway bar bushings when they picked your car up. Doesn't mean that they made them go bad. It's just that's how you got that problem after they got done. He goes, how sure are you? And I said, I'm as sure as I am when you call me and ask me about the pedal went to the floor. Do you think the brakes are bad? Yes, I think the brakes are bad. Wait a minute. Did the brake pedal go to the floor after the accident or before? After. Oh, I changed my mind. It's not going to be part of the problem. Nevertheless, that's the kind of conversations we have. But and there's a tie there. Yeah, I'm just trying to make sure you understand the tie. Sometimes, not often, the shop is responsible for a problem that would normally occur. The other day we did a timing cover on a vehicle and a timing chain. And when we got done, we had a leak at the very bottom of it that we hadn't touched, but we did. So the technician used a small chisel to pop the cover loose. So we had a leak afterwards. We had to go fix it. So there, I can tell you, shop owners know when they need to raise their hands. They're just that some of them have their hand in their back pocket, covering their wallet, thinking you want to jump in there, when really they should just raise their hand and say, we screwed up and I'm sorry and I'll fix it. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Car repair is real easy. I just want to remind you, right now the industry is in shambles to some extent, and here's why. First of all, the cars today, the newer cars today, don't really need any kind of special treatment until they hit 75, 80, 90,000 miles. So the days of you bringing your car every 3,000 miles, and we would do a rotation on this one, and then we'd wait one, and then we'd do another, and then we'd do this, and then we'd do... Those days are gone. Those days are gone. Look at your owner's manual. You got fluids in there that don't need to be changed to 100,000 miles. Brake fluids, coolant, transmission oil, differential oil, I'm trying to think about windshield washer fluid. There's a lot of that. So what some of the people in our industry do is they make up their own, and they'll say something like, well, this is Arizona, and that book wasn't written for Arizona. Here's your response. Say it with a smile on your face, especially you ladies. Oh, I didn't know that. Let's do this. Why don't you order me an Arizona manual and call me when it comes in? Boy, you will. That guy won't know what to say, because there is no such thing. That manual's written for every environment that car is designed to be in. Oh, and there'll be a lot of times that they'll say, well, Arizona is different. No, it isn't. Arizona is no different than any of the other states. You got Minnesota that's 40 below zero, and Arizona that you know, the ambient temperature is 105 or more. The car is designed for all of those parameters. So then the other have we got a caller?
Yes, we do.
Oh.
We have Dave.
Dave. I'll take Dave real quick. Dave, how are you?
Good, thanks. So my wife's in love with those older Sequoias, and we just bought a used one. It's just under 100,000 miles or 200,000 miles, but it didn't have the sticker to tell us, you know, when the last timing chain was changed. But the price was so low that I found it hard to pass up. It was nice in every regard. So I'm wondering, how do I figure that out? Is there a way, if I take it over to Tom at Blackwell, so he can figure that out, or is it
just, I'll have
like,
to
change it and
No, you don't do it. I'll help you with Tom. He's brand new in the industry. He doesn't know crap from shinola. I'm teasing you.
I got that impression.
His fingernails are clean. and the only reason why his head is bald is because his wife hits him so many times with the bat, and he has stitches, and so he just shaved his head. The answer is yes. This is an easy one. Next time it's up on the lift, he'll put a big bar on the front of the crankshaft, on the nut on the front of the crankshaft. Now, if they're slopping the chain, you can imagine that we'll move the bar and there'll be no tension, and then all of a sudden there'll be big tension as we take the slack out of the chain. So, yes.
Okay.
Tell him if he can't test the chain, the slop in the chain, have him call Mark. And he has my cell phone number, but you can have him call Mark, and I'll spot him the thing. This is something easy. Now, I don't know if your Sequoia has a distributor or not, but the other way to do it is to take the distributor cap off and watch the distributor, because the crankshaft drives the timing chain, the drive shaft drives the cam drives the distributor. So if you watch the top of it and you move the crank back and forth, the rotor should move in complete synchronization. Now, sometimes it's not perfect, but any good seasoned, greasy-fingered guy can move the crankshaft and go, yeah, there's a lot of slopper. No, you got some time left on this. So that's okay. What I would do. But just tell him I called Mark, and he said that he'll be happy to guide you. Just call him, and he'll help you.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate your help.
You bet.
Bye.
We have another caller. Who might that be?
That would be Richard.
Richard, how can I help you today?
Hey, Auto, mobile drop, 6-speed automatic, and
okay, Richard. Okay, hold on. We're just getting clips of it. If you're on Bluetooth, can we get you off? And because we're not. Okay, go ahead. Let's try it again.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Go ahead. I think we lost him.
He dropped, yes.
Okay. Richard, just call me back. We had you the second time. But if you're like me, you didn't really know which button to push next. So we were talking about self-defense for car expense, and this is as easy as it gets. They tell you you need something, and you say to them, you know, my dad's an old technician, and why don't you do this on the work order? Write down exactly what needs to be done, and tell us what you see that says that, and then give me an out-the-door price. And I want to tell you something. When you ask somebody to write it down, give you a price, and sign their name to it, if they have a heart that's quite black, they're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. So they'll come up with one reason I forgot or something like this. But you have to ask them, what symptoms do I have?
2 minutes.
Because virtually every single repair on your car is going to have the fluid's dirty, you're leaking oil, you got a clunk here, the steering wheel is intermittently hard and intermittently soft, the car turns right good but not left good. Those are all those parameters that we have. So, ladies, the guys will never do this, but the ladies, what symptom do I have that you're going to fix with your suggested repair? Well, you need a whole front end repaired. Why? What's the symptom? Oh, blah, 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 blah. The answer is going to be, you've got some bumping and thumping, and when you turn left and right, you'll see that you move the steering wheel quite a bit before the car responds. You go, yep, I do have that. So, what are you going to give me? I'm going to give you move the steering wheel a half an inch to the left, and the car's going to move a half an inch to the left. Bingo. We're done. What symptom are you going to repair? And give me this in symptom, what you're going to repair that I have right now. How much is the out-the-door price? I want to write my check before I leave home. I want my old parts back. So put my old parts in the box they came in, put them in another box, and put them in the trunk of my car. My husband likes to look at those things, you know. So just humor me so that he's happy, okay? That way somebody else can look at those parts and agree or disagree. However, here's the best part. If there's a problem and you still have the problem, you can go back and say, you said you were going to fix the clunk with two lower ball joints. I have exactly the same clunk, so let's do this. Put the old ones back in. Give me a credit for the ball joints and the labor, and I'll give you another shot at the clunk. You have to do that with a smile on your face. But that drives home the point. You missed it. So I have the old ball joints. Let me just give them back to you. And either you give me a credit or you put my old ones back in. Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you have a comment and you want to beat me up or you want to say thank you, do it. Mark at MarkSalem.com. See you next Saturday right here at 10.